get started. Hi, my name is Leah. I know most of you or have met most of you. And today I'm going to give a talk about Zen and creativity. When I was given the opportunity to give this talk, I came up with, and this was months ago, I came up with a couple other ideas before I got to this one. The first thing I came up with was, oh, I know, I'll talk about Zen and quantum physics. This will be great. And it's got a history back to the 60s and all that. And then I've got these books and I watched all these YouTube videos. I said, oh, this will be great. And then easy, right? So easy, just a little topic. So then I realized that no, this probably wouldn't be the best topic for me. It's kind of impersonal. It's very much like I'm talking about something out there and learning about it. It's great, but it's not really something that I know. So I thought, well, okay, what's something really personal? Well, and I thought, okay, I'll talk about environmental activism. I'll talk about, here we are dealing with lots of results of decades of fossil fuel burning, and you are all familiar with this topic, extreme weather, and it's hard not to talk about this because it's like primary importance in my psyche at any given time. But, I won't say but, I'll say and. I will continue to speak out about this. Domio has this well covered right now. She talked about it in, and I recommend, podcast number 237, podcast number 238. Her Dharma talk, Eco Anxiety, which was on April 4th of this year, and then her Dharma talk, Buddhist Teachings about Environmental Responsibility, which was on September 10th. So there you go. She's got it. So then I thought, well, I kept hearing people talk about their various creative, artistic lives and their various endeavors in the Sangha. And then we have this open mic night that I've been to a couple nights. And it's been really great to see everybody get out and express themselves. And people are poets and people are musicians. And now you can't hide. I know you're there. And I know that you do all these great things. I would like to just kind of go around the room if anybody's willing. To say, raise their hand and say, here's what I do. And this can be anything that's a creative act. And I will start by saying, I am a painter. Done. Anyone else want to admit?
I'm a
Yes?
painter
You're a painter too?
and a writer.
And a writer. Great. Anyone else?
I'm a novice potter.
I'm a painter.
Potter.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, potter we have, and painter, great. I knew that about you. Ha, I was going to pick on you anyway, Veronica. And of course, James is a musician. We know
I
that.
also knit.
You knit.
I do.
Oh,
I do.
I love it. Men who
Yeah.
knit is, yes, shiketsu.
I also paint and dabble in the arts a little bit. I draw, I paint, that kind of thing.
Draw. Yeah, you don't have to be good at this to admit it. Jenny.
Sometimes I'm good at it, sometimes not so much.
Yeah, don't be shy. Just like if you
Yeah.
do. Jenny, yeah.
Well, if you don't have to be good at it, I draw and paint too.
I am a singer, songwriter, guitar player, and a dance, and I've been a dancer since I was a kid, off and on.
Oh my gosh. Dancing, huh? Like what kind of dancing?
Oh, started out with tap and ballet, and in college I did modern and jazz, and then I had a great time with folk dancing for 10, 15 years with a large community of people I got to know really well, and we had live musicians, fiddle, banjo, guitar, and it was great fun.
Oh, that sounds incredibly fun.
It was.
Tyler, you're next. What's up?
I've started a cross stitch a couple of years ago, and I just sort of, when I have free time, I've been teaching myself how to cross stitch because my mother and sisters all did it, and I always watched from a distance but never got taught. And one day I was like, I want to learn how to do that. So I do cross stitch, and then I've been just recently this year, I've taken up, I'm starting to take up bonsai, and I've been starting to grow the plants myself, but in and started to look at like how to do that. But that's very new, but I'm excited about that one. You have to be patient. I want to take some time to get into.
Yeah, years sometimes, right? Years. Josh or Joshua, sorry if I'm.
So I'm also a musician. Did it professionally for a few years, mostly upright bass. Ironically, sort of, I feel like the creative side is actually being coming out a little bit more now that it's not specifically for making a living. So doing some composition and getting into some more improvised music and just trying to have fun with it.
Ooh, improvised. I love the sound of that. Paulette.
Yeah, I write and I draw. And I love them both.
Awesome. Well, see, I knew it. Yes, Cedar.
I engage in various mediums for therapeutic reasons and insights.
Oh, yeah.
And I do improv stuff with a friend of mine, and I have singing roles and things.
Oh, I see. Great. So music, more improv in the music realm.
And art.
And art. Hey, everybody's so talented. This is great. Yeah, so I was going to pick on Marv, but he's not here. Baskets. I was thinking of Marv when I wrote this part. Beautiful baskets. So again, like to be good at it, I love that everybody's like, well, I just started and I dabble in this or whatever. Absolutely, it doesn't, this isn't about the level of achievement, it's about the experience of doing it. So I feel like there's a connection between spirituality and creative endeavors for sure. So maybe by looking at this through a Zen lens, we can come up with some ideas together. And for now, here's a few ideas that I came up with, and then we'll talk about it later. The first parallel I can draw is this, that creativity, like Zazen, is an embodied practice, often embodied practice. We use our bodies, our arms to drum, our feet to dance, even our fingers to type on the keyboard. Sometimes when creating, it helps to get even more in touch with the body and remind yourself that this is embodied practice. For example, when I teach art, I like to address how the student is sitting and moving their arms and hands. So I did a brief stint teaching, volunteering in the school, elementary, and this, for some reason, fourth and fifth grade is like the time when kids develop an awareness that they might not be any good. And so they go from, I'm drawing, I'm painting, I'm to hunched over, you know, trying very hard to get it right like this. And ugh. So, well, you know, you think, well, that doesn't matter. It's the results that matters, paint on the canvas and what they draw, but you'd be surprised what happens to the results. Not only when you are closed and hunched over and gripping the pencil really tight. It's like, I gotta get this right. But when you sit up, take a deep breath, loosen your grip, move from your elbow or your shoulder in your painting or drawing. I know I'm very painting focused during this part, bear with me. And or even move from your core. The art changes a lot when you do this. It opens up. So I was thinking of this, and it reminds me of the way we pay attention to our posture when we sit zazen. Then I thought of an enso, which most of you know what this is, but it's a single brush stroke of circle done in one breath and one stroke. And it's usually a, you know, large Zen calligraphy, uses these big brushes and big paper, you know, and it goes. that. Zen calligraphy stresses this completely open and unrestrained movement. And even if you aren't creating something that looks like Zen calligraphy or isn't Zen calligraphy, you can kind of sneak some of that vibe into your art and enliven it. And so now I talk about singing. Okay, so I have sung before. I've sung in choirs. I like to do it. I'm not good at it. So this is that, hey, it doesn't matter how good you are at a thing, you know, to talk about it. Yay. I thought about it in this way, that it's another thing that sort of parallels Zen to me. So bear with me a sec. I'm going to get there. It's opener, the better. It's embodied. And when a band has a guitarist, a bassist, a drummer, and a lead singer, it looks to the outside world like the lead singer is having a great time. They have the easiest job. Oh my gosh. There's no instrument. They're just singing. How easy is this? This is so easy. But if you've ever tried to sing on stage, you know this is very different. And instead of the instrument being external to you, you are the instrument. You have to care for yourself. And for example, I play recorders. And so with recorders, you have to clean them and put them away and get them away from extreme temperatures so they could crack, you know. So like, imagine that's yourself. You have to care for and learn to use what is essentially an instrument with a reed in it, in your throat, and then a bellows, which is here. And the bellows, the air supply, is the most crucial thing to learn how to use properly. And in order to do that, you have to sit up straight, line up everything vertically, don't slump, breathe deep from below the diaphragm, and then I thought of the hara, and it kind of felt similar. So, another thing that I thought of is that creative activity grounds us in the moment. When we're in creative mode, we're leaning on our right brain function. So that's kind of where all this spiritual, you know, Zen stuff, and then left is more like, I gotta logically put all this stuff together and figure everything out. So if we lean on the right brain function, I joke with people that I'm kind of right brain dominant, so I walk around like this a little bit, kind of all the time. There's a book called Drawing on the Right Side of the Brain, which I really, really recommend. Even if you don't draw, or you think you don't draw, it's really good. It's by Betty Edwards. And a main theme of the book is that she suggests when we're attempting to draw something, that we need to see what's really there as opposed to our own projections of what we think is there. So, you know, beyond our preferences, our assumptions and our beliefs of what the subject is in front of us or what it means or anything, like if we're in the moment with what is actually there, it can radically alter the way you see the object and draw the object. So there you go. I've summarized the whole book. You don't need to buy it at all now. That's all. No, just kidding. That's a main theme in the book, but then Betty Edwards gives you a bunch of ways to get there, like a bunch of exercises and things. Anyway, it's a really great book. And that kind of reminds me of Zen in a way also. And then I thought, oh, okay, got to talk about flow. Talk about flow state. And flow state is a term invented by the psychologist Csikszentmihalyi. And I can say that because I'm Hungarian and no one else should attempt it, ever. It's just a name. They just go, oh my God. He specializes in studying positive psychology. And in this optimal creative experience, when things just fall into place and we're in the zone, which is a term you've heard before, I'm sure, the peace plays itself. We lose ourselves in writing for hours. And the clay at the wheel forms perfect vessels, like magic. Just things just pour out. And it's wonderful, wonderful when this happens. And I'm sure if, has anyone felt flow before when they're doing, yeah? Mostly, yeah, sometimes. It's good, huh? I love it. And if you know, you know. It's one of those things. Huh? When we're in a flow state, we lose track of time. Thoughts about present and past tend to fall away, and the experience of the now heightens. You're setting ego-based thoughts aside too, like, how am I doing? This is my favorite ego-based thought always. How am I doing? Do I look or sound okay? Did I practice this part enough? What will my mother say when she sees this painting? What will my father say when he hears me play this harp for the first time? This actually happened to me, and it's just, okay, don't. It's all right, Leah, we're okay. When in this flow state, it can be a mindfulness practice. It can be a meditative practice in itself. What's important, I think, is to see, even though there can be output to creative endeavors or work, you know, involved, that focusing on the present and letting go of everything else, ego, results, the work itself, this to me is creativity, optimal creativity, and seen through a Zen-inspired lens. And a couple more ideas I had here. Creative endeavors both benefit from, and help the creator to set everything down. So to clear your mind, or just stop fighting your mind, and allow things to happen, to just happen, with freshness and spontaneity. Improvisational music makes me so impressed. I'm like, how can you do this? There's no music in front. So James, I want to thank you for recommending the Wayne Shorter bio, Zero Gravity, because it was really good. And I hadn't thought much about improvisational jazz until I watched this bio, and I was like, oh, it was so good. So talk about letting go in musical form. It was great. So there's an interesting book that many artists have read or used to break out of a creative block, and it's called The Artist's Way by Julia Cameron. Does everybody know this book or no? We're nodding. Yes, yes, we have. Okay, it's such a popular book, and I love the book. I've loved the book for years. It's not, I will say, it's not a Zen or even a Buddhist book, because she mentions God more often than I might like. But one of the core tenets of the book is that you should write 30 minutes a day in the morning. It's called the morning pages, or morning pages exercise. And the idea with morning pages is just type whatever comes out, whatever comes to mind, and let it go by typing it or writing it. I think she says you're supposed to handwrite it, but anyway, my hands cramp up, so I type. But without stopping yourself, without editing yourself, or selecting one thought over another, you just write or type it all out for 30 minutes. You set a timer. So the metaphor I like to think of with this one is a hand pump attached to a well water spigot, and you have to turn the handle and open it up and start pumping. And maybe there's a sputter or two at the beginning as the water starts, but pretty soon you've got a clear stream of water coming out. And that's when to put the bucket under, not before, at the beginning when it's just sputtering about. But you have to get it going, get the flow going. And if you've never been in a rural setting and gotten water started out of one of these spigots, then it's probably just, I hope you can imagine what I'm describing here. And when I thought about these morning pages again, I wondered if there's another way that we could set everything down and let the mind clear. I wonder, oh, that's Zazen to me. So then the big question. Oh, well, I thought about maybe I should just face the question, why do art at all? Because honestly, some mornings or days, I'm just uninspired. I just don't, like, why do we create art and music and poetry and sculpture? Why do we do any of this? It's kind of a big, heavy philosophical question. And I admit sometimes it can be a challenge. And, you know, why am I even doing this? But, you know, art can be a lot of things to a lot of people, or creative output can be a lot of things. It can be a vocation. It can be a bonding ritual. It can solve a problem. It can serve a purpose, specific purpose. It can just be an expression of yourself or communicate a specific message. And for me, I thought, well, you know, making art is the expression of the human experience, just being alive. It's almost like breathing. Sure, you know, these are all reasons to be creative, but I thought, well, could the arts be forms of spiritual practice? Just like Tai Chi, yoga, haiku, calligraphy, those clearly are linked, but maybe everything is. Dancing is. Creating a clay pot is. To sing is. I can sure see these things as being closer to practice with a capital P than almost any human activity than I can think of. So to sum up this haphazard list of ideas, thank you for bearing with me. I think that Zen and creativity are mutually enhancing. I feel like the reason that our Zen practice and creative practices complement each other is because they are on the same track. Both are embodied practices, bringing body, mind, and heart together, and hopefully to keep you rooted in the here and now, in this moment. We are in the practice, in the flow, when we have set everything down and allowed the emptiness to fill us up. And I'd like to quote Domio here from a recent talk she gave. Zazen is a profound religious act that is our deepest, most sincere, and heartfelt response to the wonder and challenge of life. And then I thought, well, if I tweaked it a little bit, I would say that creativity is a profound spiritual act, a deep, sincere, and heartfelt response to the wonder and challenge of life. So I would like to open it up to you guys and like to know your thoughts. Specifically, I was thinking, gosh, I want to know, how have you found that creativity relates to your own Zen practice? And how do our creative endeavors enhance and inform our practice? So things to think about.
I'm here to answer that question, but I'm not a plant. I was not put here on purpose to answer that question.
Thank you, James. Our plan is coming together.
Maybe the first. But yeah, that was exactly what I wanted to say. It was the answer to that question. Like one of the greatest Zen teachings I've ever encountered is not a Zen teaching at all. It's actually a quote by the jazz saxophonist Sonny Rollins. And Sonny Rollins said, "Learn everything there is to know, take it all in, absorb everything, and then when you get on stage and you put the horn in your mouth, forget it all. Just completely forget it.
Yep.
And I think that equates to that flow you were talking about, where you just like, and I've felt that too. Like there are moments where I would be on stage, I put the horn to my face, and I'm thinking, and I'm like, oh, this note's not right, and do I really want to play this? You know, and it's very mental. Mm-hmm. And then other times where the trumpet just like literally felt like an extension of my body, like it was just one. Complete, like my body actually ended out here, mm-hmm. and or even extended beyond the end of the instrument, and it was, you know, incorporating mm-hmm. everyone who was listening, you know. And you know, it's like craving after that feeling, like, how can I get that again? You know, I want that again. That was when it was all really working. And so that piece of Zazen has always just clicked for me. Like, I have no problem getting into that. Doing it is a different story, but like understanding what's supposed to be happening on the cushion was a very natural transition, because mm-hmm. I spent so much time with a horn in my face doing exactly the same thing. Mm-hmm. So I appreciate your connections there. It was wonderful.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Yeah, I was going to say that if you didn't, that boy, that feels like Zazen for me.
Yeah.
Because I'm trying to get to that place where I'm not thinking about that place. And it's just like, oh my gosh, I'm almost there. Ah. It's great when you're there. Yeah. So. Come on, one person. Who do we got? Oh, Denny, yay. Hi.
First of all, thank you so much for this talk, Leah. I'll just share really quickly that not too long ago, excuse me, I don't dance much anymore, but my husband and I have been doing Tai Chi for about 4 or 5 years now, which feels a lot to me like dance, because it's the gestures are very specific, but they also flow. That's part of the whole purpose of it. But I recently started doing Zazen before I did Tai Chi. And it really felt very, a lot more, the flow feeling was really accentuated. I wasn't thinking about what the next movement was. I could feel the sensation of every move I made from my toes to my fingertips. And it was just very similar to getting into that spaciousness that you arrive at every now and then when you do Zazen. And not too long ago in a discussion here, I mentioned that I was really stuck. I couldn't get back to my guitar and singing. So after that experience with Tai Chi, I tried doing Zazen and then picking up my guitar. And that was really freeing, kind of opening feeling for me too. So I'm throwing that out there for anybody else who might be feeling stuck to maybe try that. Do Zazen first and then pick up a pencil or instrument or paintbrush, whatever.
Great, good tip. It's like morning pages, but not in that way, that to just get the flow going, to just get out of your own way and let channel, you know, let stuff happen. It's such a great space to encourage. Veronica.
I love this topic because I make a lot of art, and my hobbies have always been artistic. And one thing, a few different things can come to mind, but one with art is the Zen really brings is the concept of imperfection, because I've taken so many different art classes and been exposed to so many different philosophies, but the ones that stick with me the most are the instructors who encourage imperfection. And I have also come across instructors who are very rigid about perfection. And I just have decided to let that go. It's interesting, the art world. And then for me, what I've learned about myself is I love all art, but I have like two different sort of artistic needs. And one is when I need to calm down, and I use art to calm down. And when I want to do that, I often just do like really repetitive doodling, like I'll draw a leaf and fill it with polka dots, like just something really calming, cross stitch. People do knitting. So that's like art calming me down. But then at other times I want art to excite me. And that's where I do like big canvas painting and color mixing and allowing things to be unpredictable or trying a whole new type of art that I've never tried before. So I don't know, art's brought a lot to my life, and I would encourage people to find some sort of connection to it, even if it's just like a little something non-threatening or something wild and crazy. But I love this talk and I loved all those words and I took notes. So thank you, Leah.
Thank you, Veronica. I am a big fan of art as therapy also. Art as expression, getting it out, and art as therapy. You don't have to be good. So, you know, I would say those teachers that have the perfectionistic thing, it's like if you put that aside, like don't listen to that, because if you put that aside, you actually get further. You know, you're able to get more out of the experience, because otherwise you feel like you have kind of a lock. You have a block there of like, well, I could do up to here, but then I don't want to make a mistake. It's like, nah. Thanks, Veronica. Yeah, I have anyone here? Tyler looks next. Or Cedar? Oh, we did it. Go Cedar, and then we'll go Tyler. We'll alternate.
I wanted to add on to the art therapy part, of course.
Oh, yeah.
And, because that's where my background is. But
I'm going to need to lean in and really yell.
Product.
I don't yell very well. With my art therapy background, I really want to emphasize our drawing, our, you know, because I've heard so many times, I can't draw.
Yep.
And everybody can make a line on a paper. Everybody can move their body. And I think it's been a way of our culture to cut off our creativity and allow that expression to, you know, we're not talking about fine art here. We're talking about allowing our body to express something, to show something to us. And so, yeah, I just want to really encourage, in your own space, you're never going to display it to anybody. Get out some medium and move your body and let that be come on the paper.
That's it. Thank you.
Good recommendation. Thank you. Tyler.
Yeah, I guess I one of the ways that I find that Zen and creativity has really changed in my life was in my like farming homesteading practice. In that I learned how to like grow food in like urban farming, very much like for production purposes, like how much food can we get out because we're feeding the community or whatever, and things were, you know, very much done in pretty rigid sort of very sort of farmy urban farm sort of ways. And that's how I brought it back to my own living. But as I started to get into Zen and embrace Zen, it totally changed how I can work with my own gardens and grow my own food, and like creativity and sort of the idea of Zen just being, you know, it's not everything we're doing isn't for what's going to happen in 4 months at harvest season, but instead it's sort of like being there right now anyway. And it just opened up a whole other world of like adding flowers and other like ornamental things into my garden that may take up space that could have been more food, but it adds a level of creativity and beauty to the space, or having pathways that aren't just straight and rigid rows and like things like that. And just Zen really let me sort of embrace of maybe less, in some ways, less productive in the physical thing, but in other ways, like so much more meaningful and part of my food growing and homesteading. So, yeah.
Thank you, Tyler. I would never thought of it that way. But yeah, I guess if you have kind of a more right brain approach to looking at, especially when I think about a permaculture garden as opposed to a traditional garden in rows, I'm very visual, but I can sure see that, how if you're imitating nature and planting things in more of a natural way, it would be more productive and be different, you know, that way. So yes,
I just wanted to talk about a phenomenon. If I am being productive,
a I think, yeah.
Talking about
your speaking. Yeah. We've got mic problems today.
Open my mouth. Okay. Can you all hear me now?
It's better, but the closer you can get to the mic, the better.
You may not want to actually hear this, so. All right. Better? Here we go. There's a phenomenon that happens to me, and I'm pretty productive both when writing and painting. I will come, and I think it makes me also think about meditation. I will set aside paintings that aren't finished, or that are works in progress, or are finished, and think, wow, I must have been in some weird flow state because this looks a little erotic. I can't really show this to anyone. Or this looks a little demonic. It's an angel, but not your standard. I don't do flowers and angels. I do Renaissance figures.
Oh, yeah.
That I have copied and then add something contemporary to it. Anyway, I'm always a little nonplussed to the point where now I won't show anything anymore. Because there's this unconscious element. And maybe you don't have to worry about that.
No, I totally have to worry about that.
Huh? Okay, well, anyway, I'll leave it like that.
Paintings that are just like, what?
That's it.
What is this thing that I just painted? What will my mother say? Was I in the driver's seat during this? Yeah. I didn't have my filters up, apparently, and it was just... was just a natural, whatever I did it, and that's one of the things I have been still learning my whole life. It's like, well, some paintings are okay for other people to see, and some people don't want to see the other ones, and it's okay. You can paint something just because you created something, and the value was in the time and the place that you created the thing. That was the value in it. The story can end right there. Brian, hello.
So this may relate to that. There's a book called No Ordinary Genius about Richard Feynman, the physicist and Nobel Peace Prize. So, and basically the title was, you know, there are not lots, but there's a fair number of really, really, really smart people who do this, that, and the other thing. But this guy was not just that way. You know, he was not just a genius the way other people's are genius, this other thing. And I liken that sometimes to like there's an ordinary kind of creativity. So, you know, I have to pump stuff out and, you know, you're pumping it out and, you know, it's not the same thing as you did before. And so it's a little creative. But there have been times in sitting when I'm not in a flow state. I'm in kind of a wow state. Where did that come from? You know, so I've sat. So the gunk's cleared away and something popped up. And so I kind of think it's not me. It's not the universe. It's that magical place where, you know, you're sort of in the universe or whatever. And just together, boom. This thing pops out. So it is, you know, it is that thing where the whole is greater than the sum of the parts and stuff like that. But it's just that rare time when something sort of comes out of left field. Like that's not really me. I'm not really capable of that all by my lonesome. Or I'd never thought along those lines exactly that way before. And then boom, that just came. And it wasn't an imposition in the sense like, you know, somebody kind of came in and gave me stuff. I'm not speaking in a foreign language, you know, blah, blah, blah. It definitely relates to what I've been doing or puzzling over. but it's in a whole different track. Anyway, so that's the wow state versus the flow state thing. So anyway.
Brian, do you think the flow state leads to the wow state?
You know, that's a great question, and I think it doesn't. I think there's an opportunity cost, a path dependency, and when you're nothing wrong with the flow state, perfectly, it's wonderful and all too rare. But sometimes this is kind of like the from left field, like where did that come from? Who, you know, it's not like I'm going and stuff is hit, you know, and you know every footfall lands at precisely the right place at exactly the right time and stuff. This is where, like, pardon me, wait, I'm sorry. You, anyway, that's the.
Thank you, Brian.
You're more than welcome.
And you.
So I just wanted to respond to that, and it's Stephen King's muse. Oh. Have you all heard about his muse?
No.
Stephen King, in his book on how to write, which is the laugh because none of us quite live up to his instructions, but he reveals that his muse does not come from above, or it's not ethereal. It's a little guy that smokes a big cigar and lives in the basement and comes up, and when that makes an appearance, that's where his inspiration comes for his novels. I find that very interesting.
Well, I do too. And you know, muses, yeah, muses can take on different forms, you know, for different people, I think. That doesn't sound weird to me. Sometimes I have a little golden monkey that sits on my shoulder that tells me what to do. So that's totally fine.
I'm going to start smoking cigars again. Yeah. I'm doing it all wrong.
So, yeah, Betty.
Can you hear me? Yeah. So I do pottery. I've been doing it for a few years, and so I consider myself a novice. And what Zen has taught me, and what pottery teaches me continuously almost every day, is the lessons of impermanence and imperfection and non-attachment. Because it can be, you can screw up pottery really pretty much any step along the way, from wedging your clay to throwing a pot, or bisquing and glazing and glazing. I mean, there's so many things that could go wrong. So there's a big lesson in non-attachment there. And I think what I take from pottery to my Zen practice is that I'm hoping that the practice of doing pottery will lead to a flow state within pottery itself, so that I can feel that flow while I'm practicing my skills. But that also translates to Zazen and reaching some other level in Zazen as well, so mm-hmm. kind of a non-thinking place, sort of toward enlightenment if you want to go there, but anyway, yeah, thank you.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I've tried pottery too, and it takes patience, and it takes that non-attachment for sure, because I made something and it exploded in the kiln, and then I was like, well,
that's that.
I can't say that I handled it well at the time. I was like, I can't believe that I spent so much time on it. Anyway, but yeah, you're right, absolutely right. Okay, I think, what time are we at? We're 12:05. We could wrap things up a little early.
Sure. Okay. I have a question for you.
Sure.
And for all the folks that are artists, which I don't consider myself because I fall into that, but I am not creative. Is there a difference between being a craftsperson and being an artist?
Oh, that's a very, there are whole magazines dedicated to this topic. But I think a craftsperson is doing something, and this is just from my point of view, from what I've seen in the art world, the agreed upon thing is the craftsperson is someone who's doing something of someone else's design, and they're repeating it, and they're making it. So it's a handmade thing. A factory's not making it, so there's obviously, you know, craftsmanship and craft, but it's not a one of a kind designed item that you came up with yourself. So there could be a craft that you make knives, right? And you make a bunch of Bowie knives and they all look the same, and they're based on a design for a standard Bowie knife, Or you could make the Bowie knife that you enter into Knife Quarterly that has, you know, turquoise inlay and has a you could go one of a kind. That so that's to me is the difference, is kind of design and repeatability, I guess, uniqueness.
Thank you.
Yeah. Denny, you have your hand raised, I see.
I just wanted to share, my career, I suppose is the best word for it, was spent as a curator of contemporary and modern art. Excuse me, I have a throat thing going on. And that topic was huge. And it always bothered me that there was this separation. The other thing that served as something that could allow you to separate was the fact that something was utilitarian, that it could serve a purpose in daily life, which is so false, because art, even abstract art to the right person can serve a purpose of inspiration, giving a real boost to your creative spirit. And you see abstract art and spiritual art in American Indian art, even in Asian art. And there's a long tradition in Asian art and also Western European art of copying from the masters, and of there being entire studios of artists who were painting hands on the painting that the master had just sketched out. And it's, there's so much overlap like that it's just a false kind of separation. And I love, like, the American Craft Museum in New York City, if you've never been there. That's some of the most wonderful, creative examples in that there ever were. It's just, it's all creativity, as far as I'm concerned. And I don't think anybody should pay much attention to the separation. That's all I wanted to add.
Thank you, Denny. You're right. Mm-hmm. Okay. And wrap this up. We dedicate the merit of the Sangha meeting to all so that they may be able to attain the truth. All Buddhas throughout space and time, all honored ones, Bodhisattvas, Mahasattvas, wisdom beyond wisdom, Maha Prajna Paramita.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Leah. It was really wonderful.